Siren Radio. The new Siren Radio.
Excellent, absolutely wondrous on the 19th of July 2023. Amazingly wonderful in all sorts of ways. An all male lineup, actually, in the studio at least, as far as Siren Radio is concerned today. We welcome back, of course, Oliver Stanley. How are you, Oliver?
Very well, very weird weather.
Weird. I don't know. I was in Horncastle earlier today at the Joseph Banks Museum. And you know, back in the day when Joseph Banks was exploring the world in the 1700s, that was slightly weird weather. Now, it's a drop in the ocean, quite literally. We also have back again, 2 weeks in a row, he's Nigeria's finest. It's hey. Tosin Seyemi. How are you, Tosin?
I'm fine. How are you doing, Alex? How's the museum? How's the
Horncastle Museum? Yeah. It was very good, very interesting. And you could listen to an audio postcard that Kathy Manser and myself put together. Literally, it's online now if you want to go to. Obviously, don't do that because you've got Middleweek Drive to listen to. So it's all there. But do it, save it for afterwards. Online, we have somebody who I hadn't realised actually, Tosin, last week you had co-presented with before in the studio back on the 10th of November 2022 because you both made your Siren debuts together. Yourself, of course, from Nigeria and from the Netherlands, Fia van den Bogert. How are you, Fia?
I am good, thank you. Yeah, that wasn't that long ago.
But in some ways, it could have been centuries, really. But you know, we were together, and you're obviously being polite last week, not to say. But Tosin, I've already met you before. I met you in the 22nd of November, 10th of November, 2022. Also online, we have Victoria Simmons. How are you, Victoria?
I'm very well, thank you.
Splendid. And of course, you have had the privilege that nobody else on the team, including Jessica Burtis in North Carolina, has actually had of actually physically meeting Spencer Pryor IRL in real life. You actually can confirm that Spencer.
I'm the only one.
You are the only one. The only one who's actually worked through that process. Every one of us have kind of seen Spencer through the magic of Zoom, through the magic of radio, and all manner of wonderful things. But you can confirm, Victoria, that Spencer is indeed a real life human being and not artificial intelligence from the chocolate world.
I can. The photo is on my Instagram.
Fantastic. Yeah, I have seen some of the photographs. It looks as though you had a heck of a wondrous time on that side of things. So welcome back to the Midweek Drive Live, Spencer Pryor. How are you, Spencer?
I am very well. Thank you very much for having me back. And it was fantastic to have Victoria and her cousin to one of our in-person tastings in Farringdon earlier in the week.
Did she do any singing for you?
No, but she asked a lot of really great questions. I always am a bit embarrassed to ask guests to sort of, you know, sing for their supper.
This is true. And wondrous on that side.
We wouldn't have had time.
You could have made time.
Well, maybe Covent Garden in a few hours' time, Victoria, when hopefully, fingers crossed, transport challenges notwithstanding, we again will also meet IRL with Kathy Manser, with some of our other contributors. Yes, Spencer, we're having a mini get-together, our first London get-together since that thing that they called, I think, a pandemic sort of struck, basically. So our first journey down to the capital city of England, that's Europe, since 2019, actually, Christmas 2019. Very exciting. I was building up to it by going to Horncastle. Jessica has been to London. She's now back, of course, in Charlotte, North Carolina. Also, Jessica, sadly, yet to participate in this chocolate tasting delight.
One day
it's there. But in the studio, Oliver and Tosin have got this week's treat that's actually ready for the whole thing. And the question, of course, which is particularly pertinent, I think, for Fia, given that I think in terms of proximity, Balk, Netherlands, is probably closer to Belgium than in Lincoln, England, I would say. I mean, I'm geographically, I think it's certainly a lot closer than Charlotte, North Carolina, and probably from Shepparton as well, fairly close by. So what is it then about the Belgium scenario? And again, for the newbie who might just be joining, say, chocolate tasting on air, on the radio, on Siren Radio, what's it all about, basically? What are we going to talk, what are you going to share with us through the delights of Cocoa Runners, ethically sourced chocolate, of course, and indeed what Tosin and Oliver will be actually giving you feedback on as the first quarter of the program proceeds?
So craft chocolate is basically all about flavor, and it's all about environmentally sound, ethical behavior. And I'm actually hoping that Victoria's got some of it too. So we're actually going to be tasting three different bars of chocolate. Excellent.
You know, she's such a professional. That's the thing. I mean,
she's absolutely exactly, that. Yeah. No, I'm sorry that Jessica doesn't have any. We need to get you down to French Broad in North Carolina, who'd be good. And Fia, you need to go to Chocolate Makers, who are in Amsterdam, so they're sort of good guys for you. But for Oliver and for Tosin, you should basically have a bar from Mike and Becky. And while I'm talking, waffling on, I will explain the links between waffles and Belgium in just a minute. Mm-hmm. Open up this bar, but don't start eating it yet. What I want you to do is to open up the 70% short gran Lagina from Mike and Becky, who rather confusingly are actually, that's the name of the chocolate makers, but their real names are Bjorn and Julia. And even though they're in Belgium, they're actually Russian and German. But let me come back to it. So most people, when you think about chocolate, have this sort of slightly peculiar notion that somehow Belgium is good for chocolate. And by almost all accounts, with the exception of Mike and Becky and a couple of other new craft chocolate makers, this is a complete myth. The only reason why we know about Belgium and chocolate is because they invented what many of us would really call the McDonaldization of chocolate back in the 1920s and really pushed it in the 1960s, when they figured out, just as McDonald's figured out basically how everybody can sort of make hamburgers without really knowing how to cook, they did the same with chocolate. They invented this concept of couverture, which basically means that most of the chocolate that most people buy, most Belgian chocolate advertised on your sort of biscuits or on your, you know, chocolate or anything else from a supermarket, actually has nothing to do with Belgium, except for the fact that the company who originally invented this idea of shipping you big blocks of stuff that you remold and remelt and sort of call chocolate into bars or confectionaries came from Belgium. And so what we are desperate to do is to get people back to thinking about flavor. And the way to think about flavor is to basically focus on the beans and focus on the makers like Bjorn and Becky. But there is another trick, which Victoria now has done many times, and I don't think Oliver or Tosin have done. So basically what I'd like to do is to take the bar of chocolate, open it up, and then I'm gonna try and do this live on air. I'd like you to snap the bar of chocolate close to your ear so you get a nice snap, and the rest of you can sort of get that too. And then what I want you to do is, before you basically start scoffing the chocolate, and you don't want to scoff the chocolate at all, I want you to give it a quick sniff. But then what I want you to do is to, and Victoria's already ahead of us here, what Victoria knows to do is, with the ham which has not got the chocolate in it, is please to squeeze your nose very tightly shut and then drop the chocolate on your tongue and just suck it a bit. And what we're trying to do here is show you the difference between taste and flavor, and why chocolate, especially if it's not Belgian, has basically got more flavor than just about anything else on the planet. So you won't asphyxiate if you basically keep your mouth open as you suck the chocolate and you keep your nose tightly shut. But you may be able to get some texture as you do this, because this is a stone ground bar, which I'll explain in a minute. But what you won't hopefully get is much taste or flavor. You might get a little bit of taste. So I'm going to count to three, and then I'm going to basically get you to release your noses and pretend you run 100 meters and breathe in and out through your mouths. Okay? One, two, three. And what should suddenly happen after you do this is you should suddenly be accosted by a whole range of aromas and flavors. And I can see Victoria smiling. And I can sort of see, I think, Ollie and Tosin smiling too. And what you've just discovered is that the amazing thing about chocolate is that not only is it going to be a bit sweet and a bit bitter and a bit salty, but it's also got all these extraordinary complex aromas. And these come from the cocoa bean. And so what you really want is chocolate which comes directly from cocoa beans, and to savor the flavor in those rather than scoffing what the Belgians invented, which is mass-produced, ultra-processed junk food, which is basically all around adding sugar, salt, and fat.
Darn those Belgians and the asterisk the Gaul ways and such like, and yeah, their no, Hercule Poirot levels.
And in a way, we shouldn't really be too surprised, because, you know, their national dish, after all, is named after a machine gun. And it's basically a chip butty with lots of mayonnaise. So it's this sort of sandwich which has got lots of chips in it with lots of mayonnaise. There's nothing the matter with that, but, it, you know, it gives you an idea. And so what you really want to be doing with chocolate is looking for where the beans come from, because that way you know it's being ethically sourced, it's being properly made, and it's not the sort of Belgian Congo nonsense, which we all know about, the dark history and all that sort of stuff. But it's also going to be doing good for the planet and good for you. But just to explain a little bit about sort of why people scoff chocolate, what we also thought we'd do, and by the way, before we do that, actually, what we should do is get Victoria and Oliver on Tosin to explain what sensations they got from trying that chocolate. And do feel free to grab another piece of the chocolate and savor it. And what we've got here is a tasting wave, because basically it's quite an art thinking about taste. It's not like looking at a picture or listening to a piece of music, which we all know how to do. Because what you want to do is sort of think about the experience by thinking about the texture, then thinking about the initial flavors you get, and then the later flavors you get. Because it's different, savoring. It is a skill that I think we need to learn. So Victoria, how did you find this chocolate? This is the second time you've tried it, because we tried it together in person.
Yeah, actually, I remember the last, when we tried it at the tasting, I didn't actually like it.
That's fair enough.
But I think I've actually tried it today and I did like it more, but I think it's because before this one, we tried an even coarser chocolate. So this one on its own.
Was that a chocolate that was swearing like a trooper, basically saying effing and jeffing all the way, oh, when you referred to a coarse piece of chocolate?
Yeah, it was...
A naughty chat, an expletive delete.
It was quite like
yeah.
It was a Molino rolled chocolate from Somerville, Massachusetts. So closer to Jessica's side of the Atlantic than ours.
And remember, Spencer, Jessica is coming from the land of sweet tea and boiled peanuts.
She is. And also the land of pralines. So the Belgians have this claim. Again, it's another unfounded claim to have invented pralines. Actually, pralines, whatever you want to pronounce it, were probably first invented in France by the Duc de Praline, not by the Belgians. But the Americans also have a praline, don't you? You have your own pralines. It's a sort of southern dish. But yes. But anyway, we should go back and ask Oliver and Tassim, what did you think of the chocolate? Did you notice the texture? That's the first thing.
Tosin.
I think I did. And it kind of reminded me of some chocolates I've taken at home. So there was this time we went to a cocoa factory in Nigeria, and the chocolate I've tasted before that was always sweet and savory and everything. And then they gave us a raw example of like how cocoa, like the raw form of cocoa and everything, after it's melted and everything. And I tasted it and I was like, this is not chocolate. This is something else entirely.
You tried to poison me, you said, basically. Let's
taste it. Well, it was also good, and this reminds me of that. Like, it's made from a place where they really got cocoa, and it's really, really good, and texture is nice. So, yeah.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Oliver.
Yeah, it's really melting your mouth. Like, I know that's something a lot of chocolates say, but this is the first time I've ever really, like, and then it had quite a nice crunch to it as well when you start biting in.
Yeah, so it's texturally quite interesting. Now, what I'd like you to now do, and this is very unfair for all the listeners at home, and for Fia and for Jessica, is to try the other dark chocolate in your pack, which comes from Scotland, the wonderful Bare Bones, Cameron and Lara. And they're using the same beans, but in this case, they've deliberately, what we call conching in chocolate, which is grinding the chocolate to be this sort of Willy Wonka-like smooth star. And so when you taste this, it'll be far, far, far smoother. And again, it's got the same beans in it.
In case
again,
people,
what's really?
I was just going to say, in case people are wondering, what's happened to William Coles, normally from Edinburgh in Scotland? He's actually umpiring a tennis game in Bournemouth. I know, just don't ask. It's just another line entirely. Anyway, back to yourself, Spencer.
Yeah, no, there we go. Yeah, that's definitely got me. So just out of interest, the other thing, which while you're trying this Bare Bones chocolate made out of great beans from the Dominican Republic, the other thing just to quickly talk about is the other reason why Belgian chocolate is quite famous is because of actually some brilliant marketing by an American company of a parvenu in the chocolate world known as Godiva. In the 1960s, basically, Pepperidge Farm, who are a sort of biscuit maker, tried to sell Godiva in the US. And they did it in a very clever way. They sort of modeled their stores as being like a Tiffany's or a jewelry store, where you had sort of people in gloves weighing up the chocolate. It sort of got handed out in lovely little bags and these truffles and everything. And because they couldn't think of anything else to advertise, they advertised it as being Belgian chocolate and therefore good. And this is really the start of the idea that somehow Belgium...
Blame the Americans, this, you know, clearly.
It's the Americans again. Yeah. It's the people who add butyric acid to them.
Sorry.
It's all right, we will forgive you. You do have some great chocolate makers, Brian Graham and Dahlia up in upstate New York. And as I said, in North Carolina, Raleigh, you've got the great French Broad, who are just absolutely fantastic, a bit named after the river there. Guys, how are you getting on? Victoria, how are you getting on? This is a new bar for you, Victoria. So this should be an exciting one for you to have a go at.
Well, I promised my mum that I would save her some for when she comes to England, and I don't think she's going to get to taste this one.
No.
There you go. It's a Cameron and Lara, well
amazing.
Done. Yeah. Glasgow. It's Glasgow. And it's a lovely packaging, too.
It's got a strangely orangey taste.
An orangey taste.
Yeah, it's sort of the great thing about cacao is that it contains more flavors than just about anything on the planet. And so if you just let it melt in your mouth, it releases these volatiles and aromas. It has this sort of what we call technically retronasal olfaction, which is a very fancy way of saying that humans are unique in that when we put something in our mouths, we can use our sense of smell, our olfactory system, to detect those aromas. And I know this sounds really odd in claiming this is a unique human attribute, but other animals can't do this. They can get what we call tastes, sugar, salt, fat, bitterness, that sort of thing, but they don't get the aromas. So the smells we get, that's what flavor is really all about. And I think this bar from Cameron and Lara is just fantastically good at showing that. And it brings out some of the fruitiness, some of the nuttiness that hopefully you also got from Bjorn and Julia, or Mike and Becky, or however they want to call themselves on their packaging.
Spencer, if we may, we'll take a short musical break whilst we gather our collective taste buds together. And also I prepare to question Jessica on a photograph which I sent her, which was forwarded to me via Pamela Suman, our New York correspondent, about foaming southern sweet tea scented hand soap. Now, I mean, this could be dangerous, Jessica, in so many ways. You presumably actually received the package on that side of things. But I feel in many ways, Spencer, we should actually have the latest Victoria Simmons number. Still a long way to go, because there is still a long way to go when it comes to ethically sourced chocolate. Is that good for you, Spencer?
Absolutely, but anything by Victoria is always great.
Jessica, assuming you are a naive New Yorker, if that's not an oxymoron, and indeed, rather like Pamela Suman, you go shopping for something that the North Carolina bestest friend has actually said, you should try sweet tea, you should quite a sweet tea. You go to the supermarket and you get 365 Whole Foods Market foaming southern sweet tea scented hand soap. That's almost as negative as Belgium chocolate claiming to be healthy for you, isn't it?
Yeah, I think I associate sweet tea with just so much sugar. It's like a very sticky, like you don't want to get it on your hands. It's so sticky. So the idea of a soap, I know it's soap, but I can't separate it from that sticky feeling that comes with the tea.
It was a shocking description. I'll show the people the photograph in the studio. I mean, southern sweet tea scented hand soap, I think. What's going on? Which brings me, of course, neatly, Spencer, to that question. Ever considered producing cocoa runner soap?
No, although, of course, cocoa butter is critical as an ingredient for lots of cosmetics and soaps. Mm. So, no, not yet. No. But perhaps one day. Yeah. I mean, I'm a big fan of actually ethically sourced cocoa butter cosmetics.
This is at the heart of obviously the whole cocoa runner's routine, because it is ethically sourced. You're saving the planet one... One cocoa bean at a time. We were talking earlier today about the history of Joseph Banks, who was a naturalist. He collated all these bits and pieces together. And obviously without Joseph Banks, arguably no Kew Gardens, as well as lots of other sort of important side of things there. It is so important that we do conserve the package. And that strap line, which we came to, and you mentioned it again today, savour, don't scoff, that is so critical to the whole appreciation of chocolate, I would have thought.
No, it is. I mean, it is. It's absolutely critical. So, you know, people don't really think about chocolate, but in terms of the environmental impact. But basically, to grow one bar of chocolate requires 1.5 to 2,000 litres of water. To put that in context, a bath has got about 50 to 70 litres of water, and an avocado, which everyone gets very upset about, is 200 to 300 litres. So, chocolate is just a different magnitude. Now, for craft chocolate, this is fine because it's grown in rainforests where it all gets recycled. But as Soz would know, you know, if you go to West Africa, one of the great problems there is deforestation. So Ghana and the Côte d'Ivoire used to be 50% plus virgin rainforest. They're now down to lower than 3%. And so not only have you got deforestation because people are cutting it down to grow mass-produced cacao, but you've also got desertification, which is an absolute tragedy. But on a more sort of positive note, you can still get fantastically delicious chocolate, you know, and all sorts of varieties, if you just focus on the ethical and environmentally sensitive and friendly stuff. So what I thought we would just finally try is a milk chocolate. So it's a dark milk chocolate made again by Bjorn and Julia, or Mike and Becky, if you want to get the packaging. And this actually comes from the Congo, from the Virunga. They've called it Mugamba, which is basically one of the regions of the Virunga forest with those lovely mountainback gorillas, which you get from it. But they've done one other great attribute, which I would just quickly like to talk about, which is sugar. So sugar in chocolate is really, in craft chocolate case, it's all about bringing out the flavor. Whereas sugar for mass-produced chocolate is all about sweetness and getting you to scoff. Now, when you get to milk chocolates, craft milk chocolates, though, there's another trick you can play, which is that sugar, when you heat it above about 150 degrees centigrade or 300 degrees Fahrenheit, performs this magic trick of caramelizing. And this is true of milk too. So if you've got milk powder and you heat it above 300 degrees Fahrenheit, it will caramelize. It will have this lovely other flavor. When you combine this with chocolate, it gets really quite scrumptious and quite fantastic. So try this chocolate. And I'm sorry to be auto suggesting and telling you what I think you might be able to get into. And I can see Fia here looking very sort of, you know, worried.
If it helps, Spencer, Fia is probably agonizing over something which could lead to civil war in the midweek drive area, because with the Women's World Cup about to kick off, Fia is well aware that the Netherlands are in the same group as not only Vietnam and Portugal, but also the USA. So, I mean, the relationship between obviously Fia and Jessica could be, you know, who knows what's going to happen with respect to that, really. I mean, we normally have Jessica as the official predictor challenge person for that one, Group E, in case you're wondering. England at least have Denmark, China and Haiti, which I think means we're sort of fairly okay from that perspective. But that's by the by. Anyway, yes, back to the chocolate tasting. How's the latest one in terms of milk chocolate? Tosin?
It's really nice. I think this one melts in your mouth better than the first one. And yeah, it's mixed, but I like this one better than the first one we took, I'll lie to you. I think it's my favourite, followed by the second one. And yeah, that's all I'll say.
and Oliver.
Yeah, I'd say this one, I found it most similar to the second one, especially with the texture in the mouth. First one had kind of more of a crunch to it, but this one, less bitterness as well. I think it's like balanced by the milk.
Yeah.
It's a lot of the three, it's the closest to your mass-produced Belgian stuff. Mm.
Tosin, you probably were, Women's World Cup. Australia, yeah. Republic of Ireland and Canada are the group that Nigeria are in. So.
I'm afraid. We'll pull through.
You're going to push through. That's the official. They'll push through. It's going to be extraordinary. They obviously fear needs to have your input from your korfball scenario, which I'm sure we'll talk about. Spencer, CocoRunners.com. Is that the best place to go to actually find out more details about some of the magical things you've brought to us this very day?
Yeah, go to cocorunners.com, please. The bars will be there. But also, the other thing I would encourage you all actively to do, and maybe Victoria will chip in here, is we do in-person tastings. We also do virtual ones online where we send you a box of chocolates. And you can join in the fun and discover why savouring will save the planet and be much healthier for you.
Fia, would you like to put those last two questions to Spencer, please?
Of course. Spencer, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoom with us today?
As ever, it's been much more than reasonably. It's been phenomenally interesting and wonderful to meet you all again.
And will you please come back?
Please have me back. Yeah, no, definitely.
Excellent.
Definitely.
Spencer Pryor will return. Maybe we should do something about the Women's World Cup and the kind of winners and riders when it comes to cocoa and sport, specifically Spencer. I'm just saying, could be a possibility.
I think what we should do is women chocolate makers from three countries. So I'm going to basically suggest Portugal, England and America. So we're going to have women chocolate makers from those three. And how does that sound?
Sounds perfectly well and perfectly wonderful. Up next, MC Grammar. Yes, he's a real teacher and a rap artist. MC Grammar and Lou Hickey, all about how you should really consider showing your appreciation for your teacher. Okay, so it's the season when the exam has been passed successfully, hopefully, and you've probably been guided through a particular part of your teaching career and so on, and you may be thinking about how can we actually thank our teacher? How can we go through that whole process? Well, there is a bit of magic that's actually entailed with this next thing, courtesy, of course, of One For All gift cards, and of course, the fabulous Lou Hickey. How are you, Lou?
I'm great, Alex. How are you doing?
Excellent. Great to connect with a good self. But this time around, we've kind of raised the bar. You've raised the bar in particular because we've got no lesser personage than MC Grammar himself, the rapping teacher extraordinaire, with us as well. MC Grammar, how are you?
I'm good, Alex. I'm in the house. Thank you for having me on the show.
Well, this is good stuff. I mean, I used to cultivate a time back in the day in Cambridge of being a rapping chemistry teacher with sodium and chlorine and all sorts of other bits and pieces. But there's a line that you've put together, which I think is outrageously wonderful. And I'd like you to just give us that little verse, really, because I think starting off with, it's not expected, but nice to do. Just take it away, MC.
All right, here we go. It's a rap about gifting teachers. Hey, you might not like what I'm about to say, but 45% of teachers give their gifts away. It's not that they're ungrateful, no way, but how many mugs can you drink from in a day? So if you're thinking of giving a teacher something like this, don't stress, I've made a little list. One, personal gifts get a big tick, so you can give the coasters and key rings a miss. It's a nice thought, but here's number two. The research tells us the teachers like a group. One gift that comes from all of you, like a one-for-all gift card. That's super cool, because they can go and spend it however they want to. Go and grab a good book or even some food. So between me and you, it's time we made the move and do what the teachers really want us to do.
And that clearly, without a beatbox as well, awesome, is why you are award-winning and indeed a generally great rapper, also known as Jacob Mitchell. So thank you for that, Jacob.
Thank you, Alex.
Lou, was this something you always had in mind in terms of, yeah, we've really got to raise that bar. We've talked about best gifts to give to teachers, etc. Let's bring in a rapping teacher to really raise this thing.
Absolutely. I mean, like, that was my first time hearing that rap. That just is brilliant. I love it.
Yes, Lou.
But this is why, absolutely, we went above and beyond this year to help us kind of really share the story, put a bit of a spotlight back on teachers again. I think a lot of parents during COVID got a bit of a firsthand experience of just how difficult it is to teach and going through at home. So we have these amazing teachers every single day. They're taking care of our kids, educating them. So I think it is it's definitely worth putting a bit of a spotlight on them and saying thank you.
Jacob, have you been receiving gifts on a regular basis, or is it a case of, well, you know, once they've given me two Lotus Elite cars, you know, what else can I do with them, basically?
You know, I've been getting gifts for many years now. When I first became a teacher, 14, 15 years ago, and I'm grateful for every single one. A lot of them I have kept in a special box, especially the personal ones, the cards, the messages, the notes, the pictures. You know, I do get a lot of mugs that I won't lie and get passed on. The mugs get passed on because, you know, my cupboard's only so big and I don't drink that much coffee and tea. Key rings I pass on as well. I always have a little bit of trouble, you know, having a best teacher key ring on my keychain, because I feel like, you know, teachers are humble beings, you know, they're adaptable human superheroes. So, yeah, number one teacher, you know, that's not for me. But, yeah, I mean, any gift that a kid gives you at the end of the year is a wonderful thing to receive, because it just lets you know that they've enjoyed the learning experience with you. You know, not all kids are big fans of school, not all of them. Some love it, some don't. So especially the ones, you know, who find school tricky and tough or take a little bit of time to get used to how school works. At the end of it, when they give you a gift and they give you that nod and they say thank you or a card, you just know that you've done your job really well, which is to empower and educate them. And essentially, we're changing our future for all of us. So it's an amazing place to be in. It's the best job in the world.
Lou, it would seem that certainly gift cards are indeed something personal made by the student are the favourite gifts that teachers like to receive. I just perfectly prefer a thank you card. That's it, really. I mean, it's nice to actually receive that. Then again, having said that, we don't do it, as I'm sure Jacob would say, we don't do it for the acclaim and the merits. We do it because that's what we do, basically.
That's very true. And the recent One For All gift card research showed that 59% of teachers said that they would prefer something that was handmade by the student. But 43% did say they'd love a gift card. And I think one of the resounding messages was, MC Grammar Jacob mentioned earlier on, you know, teachers are very humble. It's the thought that counts. And 37% of teachers said in the research that like a collective gift. So like if mums and dads teamed up and actually contributed to one particular gift rather than them being individual gifts, and rather than contributing to the offload of those cups. So it's really interesting. But I think it's ultimately about the thought that counts.
And it may well be, of course, Jacob, that there are some teachers who like keyrings and mugs. I mean, there could be sort of key collectors out there who would actually go with that. But that's the beauty, presumably, of One For All, that you can actually personalise and choose your own particular reward, really.
Exactly that. And also it's very inclusive, you know, with a multi-store gift card like the One for All one, you can give what you can give, right? Especially in the times we're living in right now. You club together as a community, as a class, and you say, this is how much I'm going to give. And it goes from there. And then whatever happens, it all adds up. And then the teacher can go and buy something special that reminds them of that whole class. It's a whole class mm-hmm. gift, which is always very nice. I've got whole class gifts that I've kept for years and years. So I think it's an inclusive way of gifting teachers as well.
And what has been your best gift that you've actually received, Jacob?
Oh, wow. I've had many gift cards, which are fantastic. I've always bought great gifts of those. An Arsenal shirt with my name on the back. That was an amazing gift. Nando sauce, because I put it on pretty much anything and everything. So I love some Nando sauce. I did have the most amazing. I used to have a, there was a cake when I was at school called Chocolate Cracknell. It was like this Rice Krispie sort of sticky chocolate. And I actually was given at the end of the year a whole slab of Chocolate Cracknell, the original recipe from the dinner lady at my school, which was a wonderful gift.
I can understand why, but obviously you couldn't necessarily play for Mikel Arteta if you had too much chocolate cracknell. It's just a sort of line there. Clearly, it's a balance you need on those kind of things. As ever, Lou, One for All, and it's the number four, all.com, presumably the best place to go to find out further information.
Absolutely, yeah. You pop onto our website there, you can find out about a little bit more of the research that we conducted, or if you want to purchase a gift card for your child's teacher, oneforall.com, or just pop into your local post office or supermarket.
Makes perfect sense. Well, so we had a fantastic wrap to launch the whole process with. I mean, is this something that you actually do, obviously in addition to your teaching, but ever been tempted to actually go full time into the rap industry, Jacob? Hello.
It looks like it's moving that way, Alex. We now have a thriving YouTube channel /MC Grammar TV. We have three seasons on Sky Kids as well, which is not just about grammar. You can learn about the Vikings, the Romans. You can learn about the oceans, whatever it is, whatever tickles your fancy. The idea is to create music and rhyme and rhythm and rap that supports all kids to make all of these fun facts and fantastic learning memorable and exciting.
Fantastic. MC Grammar, the rapping teacher, of course, and Lou Hickey, marketing director at One for All Gift Cards. As ever, a delight, Lou. Take care, keep on keeping on, and happy rapping.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us, Alex.
Of course, I still cherish my Star Trek mug that Jessica Burt has sent over to me from, indeed, the States. And, you know, I got all good stuff on that basis. I think Jacob Mitchell, a.k.a. MC Grammar, was probably being a bit disingenuous there when he said he didn't like mugs, basically. And it's the thought that counts, and sometimes just the thought. That's all you need, really. It's the thought. I can't afford to actually do anything, but I have a think about your thing. Victoria Simmons, did you actually provide any presents for your teacher, or was just the presence of yourself being sufficient reward for any of the teachers that were fortunate enough to actually help with your education?
I remember giving cards, but one of the guys I'm living with is actually a teacher, and he got really emotional last night when he said that one of the parents came up to him with a card and gave him this really nice talk about how he'd been a really great teacher, and just saying something like that was really touching to him.
Yeah, I mean, Oliver presumably just actually realising that all those interminable anecdotes delivered by your legal advisor had a sort of resonance in the exam is quite useful for yourself, I would have thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, emotional. I can see you getting emotional over it. And Tosin, what about yourself? Is it a custom in Nigeria? Is it a case of lucky to be actually educated in the first place?
No, we show appreciation to our teachers, especially if we were a teacher. So in Nigeria, it's not always gift cards. It's like sometimes foodstuffs or wine or something. Really
chocolate
cool.
Cracknell cake?
Chocolate sometimes. Mm. It really depends. Like my final year, my supervisor, I got her like a bag of rice. And it was really cool. And she was up. She was like, thank you. And yeah, so it was really nice.
I mean, clearly for North Carolina, just Southern Sweet Tea scented hand soap would be the gift of choice for most teachers, I would have thought. What more could they actually want? You know, quite clearly. It's just extraordinary in every sense of the word. Okay, well, we move from that to actually road trips. And in particular, how do you actually entertain your toddler when they're actually saying, are we there yet? Are we there yet? Honestly, Kathy Manser in the car today, constantly going all the way. What she's going to be like tomorrow in a journey to London when we leave Lincoln at 6:30 a.m. just to get to Covent Garden for around about 10:30. I honestly don't know, Victoria, but, you know, if I'm looking shocked and harassed about the whole thing, you'll sort of realise, just, are we there yet? No. But we're going to find out.
Chocolate with you.
Yeah, that's true. Sam was, as a child psychologist, who will be explaining a little bit more about that. We've had lots of discussion on this in previous shows. Some parents actually put their children to sleep by driving them around in a car. That's been known from that point of view. I mean, Tosin, were you a calm, relaxed soul when you were travelling in Nigeria? Or were you constantly sort of harassing your parents or the chauffeur to say, how long is it going to be? Are we there yet?
I was harassing my parents all day. It was because I'm a very impatient person. So I'm like, let's get there already. Yeah. We need to be there. But as you grow older, you get more patient with it and you understand.
Got to become more zen. That's the key thing. Oliver, I mean, I can see you being a nightmare as a two-year-old, basically. Or is that just...
No, surprisingly not. I think four was when I was at my worst. But my brother was the loud one, my older brother. I just kind of looked at him being the loud one making a fuss and just thought, if he wasn't, I would. But he's got taken care of it.
And Jessica, were you constantly saying to your parents, Mom, when's the next boiled peanut stop coming up? When's the next boiled peanut stop happening?
I was one of the babies that my parents would, my mom, she would drive me around to fall asleep.
Yeah. Which is why you're such a star on the midweek drive, because you were sort of geared up for that for a long time. You sort of got into the car, got into the vehicle, and it worked on that basis. Yep, just like a motorway, you might well say.
So how many times can you have a round of Old MacDonald's had a farm, or indeed the wheels of the bus go round and round? Well, yeah, certainly if you're in the car and you have the toddler in the back seat, obviously safely strapped down, etc., you may well be challenged in terms of how do you keep them entertained? How do you actually work through that process? I mean, apart from the fact that obviously you wish they could just go to sleep. But that's by the by. We're delighted to welcome back to the programme, of course, ace child psychologist extraordinaire, Dr. Sam Was, to talk about this. How are you, Sam?
Hi, very well, thanks, Alex. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's always great to connect with your good self. I'm surprised by some of these findings, though. 57%, that's over half of parents, still favour the long-distance car for travelling with children, so that's fine. But a whopping 41% find it difficult to keep their children entertained during a long car journey. Is this because iSpy is not as popular as it used to be?
Well, I mean, that's a good way of doing it. I actually read it differently. I was like, what about the 59%? Because I've got a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old in my family, and you know, we've definitely experienced this a lot, that you know, these car journeys, they just feel endless. And you're looking at the sat nav and there's an hour and 40 minutes to go, and oh my goodness me, what are we going to do for the next hour and 40 minutes? So yeah, it kind of, the research does show, you know, as we're expecting, that a lot of parents do find them challenging. I think one of the reasons, Alex, is it varies a lot depending on the age of your children. So mine are preschoolers, and that was very much the age that we were targeting with this age range. And a lot of games like I Spy, they just can't play at this age. You have that really unfair thing that they can't, not only do they find it hard to follow a story, and that's something I want to come back to, you know, why children find it hard to follow stories, and something that we can do to help. Because that's definitely a great way to pass the time in a car journey. But you have young children who find it hard to follow a story anyway. And the added irony, and I always think this is so unfair, is they're too small to see out of the window. So they can look up, so they can see a little slither of sky. But me and my wife are always frantically pointing out cars and sheep out the window when they just can't see them because they're at the wrong angle. So I think that's really, really unfair that children can't even stare blankly out the window when they're young.
Yeah, being bored, being unsettled, and of course the ultimate, having a toilet accident, all very much in terms of challenges that we're faced with. But is it a case of you need to have a sing-song, that actually those songs and verbal games are very much the best way of actually keeping young minds occupied and not fretting on the fact that they can't see anything that they're supposed to be seeing, and it's almost as though they're in a sensory deprivation tank?
Yeah, definitely, Alex. So singing is one of the things. So with this campaign with Bing, we're really, really keen to raise awareness about singing, particularly with the young kids. So with the pre-verbal kids, where, as I say, stories, which I want to talk about in a second as well. But with the really young kids, the pre-verbal kids, stories aren't often, they're just not ready for them yet. But even young kids, even my 2-year-old, who's only got a few words, loves a sing-along. And from my point of view as a researcher, Alex, there's a lot of reasons why that's a really, really good thing to be doing with the kids. So a couple of reasons. So firstly, it's when you're singing, you have to breathe as if you're calm. So normally when we're feeling tense or anxious, or, you know, everyone's kicking off, we tend to breathe fast and shallowly. But then when we're calm, we take these long, deep, slow breaths in and out. And when we're singing, that's the way that we breathe too. We take a deep breath and we let it out slowly. And the research suggests that just forcing ourselves to breathe as if we're calm can actually help us to stay calm. So it's that old rule, fake it till you make it. And that's actually very evidence-based now as a way of managing emotions. So that's one of the reasons why, if you've got kids who are kicking off in the car, putting on a song to sing along to can help. And the other thing, which is, again, there's really quite a strong evidence base for this now, Alex, from the research literature, that doing things together, whether it's a game of I Spy or singing a song together, you're doing actions at the same time. So you're all breathing in at the same time, and you're saying the same words at the same time. And the research suggests that doing things together with people at the same time helps to promote a feeling of togetherness. And it helps to promote kind of mutual understanding. It's the same reason why we like to go to sports matches, and we like to go to the theatre and do stuff together, why people like singing in choirs, that type of thing. This coordinated actions, you know, make us feel together as a group. So if you've got some siblings who are rowing, or if you're rowing with your own kids, then literally putting on a song will put everyone in a good mood, but it also helps to see things from other people's point of view, to think, you know, we're all in this together.
Obviously, when you are in a car, if you happen to be the designated driver, you want to keep your focus very much on the road and not necessarily on the, oh, I'm sorry I had that accident. I was just actually too engaged with a sing-song with my children. That's not going to cut any mustard whatsoever. So I was pleased to see that you do recommend things like in-car entertainment, but audio can be a good way of actually ensuring that people can, or children can be kept entertained by listening to stories, etc. Presumably car radios as well can also help in terms of music?
Car radios and listening to music can definitely help, yeah. But definitely one of the things that And I think if you can get it working, we'll keep you going for much longer than songs, is listening to stories. And this was something I really wanted to emphasize, because, you know, for this campaign with Bing, we're really, really trying to emphasize stories. So there are a lovely selection of audio stories on the Bing app, or, you know, other ways of getting them too. But the really key thing, Alex, that I wanted to talk about is, you know, for young children, so we're thinking about preschoolers here, they often find it hard to follow a story. But what you shouldn't do is just give up and say, OK, they're not ready for stories yet. So card journeys can be a great opportunity to practice, to help children to learn, to practice understanding a story and following a story. So you've got a story that you're listening to. And rather than just, you know, our adult brains are so good at making sense of a story that we assume that kids can just do the same thing. So we just listen to one story once, then we go straight on to the next one. But in fact, all the research suggests that children's brains find it hard to make sense of a story, and it helps to do things like pause it when it's going. So, you know, you started a bit of the story, then you pause it, you explain what's just happened again. If there are any hard words in there, you explain what those words mean to help them to follow what's happening in the story. And then at the end of the story, you repeat it, you tell the story again, you express it in different words, you get them to talk about it, you get them to ask questions, and then you actually go back and listen to the same story again. And as I say, this is because the research suggests that children's brains find it hard to make sense of stories. So they don't immediately get all of the meaning the first time that they listen to it. And then listening to the same thing again and again can help them to practice making sense of stories. And then the more practice they get at making sense of one story, the easier they'll find it to understand the next story. So that's why this is really something that we want to encourage and raise awareness of, because our research suggests that it's not something that many parents would do, but it's definitely something if you can get your kids listening to long stories, audio stories, and storytelling. It's a great way to make card journeys pass in a flash.
And of course, allowing for time. I mentioned at the start of the piece, sleep can actually help. Not obviously if you're driving, but if you happen to be a passenger, or indeed you're a little child, if you get the timing right as a parent or guardian, that presumably can also make the thing almost pass like magic.
Yes, definitely. Those blissful, instead of a long car journey with "wah," or "that's my toy, mine," which is what is often the backing music to our car journey. When you have that blissful snore, two snoring children in the back seat. And so a lot of the time with that, Alex, it's the stuff that honestly we sometimes struggle with my family, which is, you know, planning when to do. So you have to be organized, but if you can do it, it really works. So, you know, you pack up the car, you get ready to leave, and then you do your bedtime routine at home. So you do the things that they're used to doing just before they go to bed, your supper time, your bath time, you're getting into your pajamas, you're reading a story. But then instead of popping them into bed, you pop them right into the car, and that's when you set off. And that generally works really, really well, because their bodies are expecting to go to sleep. So all of the preparatory stuff, you know, starts to trigger those going to sleep chemicals before, you know, and then they drop off much more easily. Otherwise, if you just pop them into a car at bedtime without any of the preparation, then if you're anything like my family, you can be driving along at 9:30 in the evening saying to the car, "You're supposed to be asleep," like that, and it never quite works. But if you plan it and get it right, then it really, really does help. And, you know, if they're dozing happily when you're sleeping, life becomes so much more easy.
Clearly, thinking strategically is at the heart of this whole process. And you've raised some of those points exceptionally well, as we knew you would. Where can people go to, Sam, for further information and details, and indeed some of those top tips on how you could avoid toddler tantrums?
So there's audio stories and sing-along songs and nice calming TV that will put your kids in a good mood while they're listening on the Bing app. And there's more advice from me on the website, so bingbunny.com.
Dr. Sam was a child psychologist extraordinaire, always a delight, and keep on keeping on.
Great. Pleasure talking to you, Alex. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, according to other research from Churchill, of course, you can, as well as singing your children a song, you can also make silly noises. 30% of children apparently like silly noises being made. I don't know, how do you find a silly noise, basically? Giving them phones and tablets. I don't know, opening car windows, lowering the temperature via the air conditioning. And indeed, top three songs. Victoria, any ideas what the top three songs are to ensure that children are entertained on long car journeys and avoiding danger naps?
Something like Head, Shoulders, Knees and Toes, or The Wheels on the Bus,
You see, this is what I would say, but no, it's Pharrell Williams and Happy at number three. Let It Go from Frozen, and number one, Baby Shark by Pink Fong.
Yeah, is Joy on there?
No. So that's all I can say. It's the 21st century.
You can't experience Joy anywhere near Baby Shark.
Yeah. Well, you know, in the immortal words of the Partridge Family, point me in the direction of Albuquerque.
Window walking downtown, feeling mighty good. And I noticed from the corner how all alone she stood. Underneath the lamplight, an angel in disguise. Lonely little runaway with teardrops in her eyes. Crazy little ragdoll, her hair was wild and tossed. And I put my arm around her, 'cause I knew that she was lost. She didn't seem to notice that anyone was near, till suddenly she turned to me and whispered in my ear. Ticket for a Greyhound bus. Her head was lost in time. She didn't know who or where it was. And anyone that helps me is a real good friend of mine.
Ministers
and presidents
may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive
and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition
remains.
Absolutely, it does. And we also can guarantee that it's a delight to welcome two genuine legends to the production. First of all, Annette Andre. How are you, Annette?
Oh, I'm fine, thank you. How are you, Alex?
We're fine. Sorry, I was just momentarily off sorting out other bits and pieces, because the way we have our studio set up here is I little wave my hand that I need to sometimes open up a Zoom area so that people can enter into the process. And we can also welcome to the Midweek Drive Live once again that ace actor and general Renaissance man when it comes to all manner of marvellous things, including actually a fantastic scenario he set up with the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network. It's the fabulous Armin Shimmerman. How are you, Armin? It will be unmuted, I'm sure, before too long. Otherwise, we'll just have to lip read, and it'd be very problematic from that point of view. Armin, welcome back to the Midweek Drive.
Thank you.
Glad that's it. Excellent. It's all coming together like TikTok. Oh, a social media thing there. Let's not go into that. Armin, I want to talk a bit about the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network, because that's a really profound thing. And it also ties in with another excellent cause that Hannah O'Brien is going to be running a marathon for very shortly. How are you, Hannah?
Hi, Alex. I'm good, thank you. I'm walking a half marathon, not running a full marathon.
Oh, Hannah, what's happened to the undergraduate that I used to know so well back at the end of the noughties into the teenies? You would sort of half marathon would have been easy peasy. But last week, Armin, Tosin, who's in the studio here, you see Tosin and Oliver, Tosin raised the question, because we were talking about the Zanzibar Film Festival, we were talking about the film industry in Nigeria, we were talking about various other things, went straight for the jugular and said, what about the actor's strike? What about the writer's strike in Hollywood? Needless to say, we're delighted that as somebody who was pretty significant in the whole union aspect, of course, of SAG-AFTRA, AFTRA, I should say, A-F-T-R-A, your thoughts on this one, Armin, because we've spoken about a lot about this, and you know that obviously from this side of the pond, full unity has been shown by equity and so on. Just talk us through the scenario and your own perspective on this crazy time that's going on in Hollywood.
Sure, I'm very glad to do so. First, I'll preface it by letting everybody know my bona fides. I served as a national board director for the Screen Actors Guild before it was merged with AFTRA for 7 years. I was a chair of one of these contract negotiations, I believe back in 1999. I have not sat in the auspicious halls for, I would say, about 15 years. So I'm not in the center of things, but I do have connections with a lot of people and they have been keeping me informed. So I can't answer some questions. There's some questions I'm just, as an actor, not allowed to answer. But I will try my best to fill you in on what's happening. As everyone probably knows, who's interested in this at all, the Writers Union went out at the beginning of July on strike, mainly because of differences in the business model of entertainment, especially television entertainment. Now more and more studios are more interested in streaming programs that are made primarily to stream, and not necessarily what we call network television, which is a show that appears once a week and can be linear, can be episodic, but you see them once a week. Streaming products, of course, you can watch an entire season in one night if you're so inclined, but there's just a different role model. In network TV, the advertisers pretty much pay for the creation of that product, of film, of TV shows. In streaming shows, the entities, the studios, they themselves put up the money for that, and they get the revenue for that from subscription audiences. So it's not advertisers. It's people who buy the subscriptions, and that pays for the creation of the programs. That has caused an entirely different model of the way things are done. For instance, when I was in my heyday and doing many shows, it was regular for a TV program to have anywhere between 20 and 26 episodes per season. And every season was every year. You know, we work consecutively. Now with streaming, it is not unusual for there to only be 10 episodes. That means half the work is gone. Half the revenue for the people who create the work, the actors, the writers, the cameramen, and the thousands of people that are involved in creating the show, because it's not just the people on the set. There are also other entities that are there as well. So half the work is done. The other thing is, because we don't have a very strict set of rules for how these productions are going to be made, everything has been done fast and loose. And what our union and the Writers Union is trying to do is to set definitive rules so that everybody knows what to expect. And also we have the extra problem that almost every industry in the world is facing, which is artificial intelligence. And in our business, artificial intelligence, as I'm sure some people have read, can create scripts if you're so inclined. If a producer is so inclined, you could ask a computer to write a NCIS script or a Star Trek script. Oh, shouldn't say that. Or that kind of a program. For the actors, it's somewhat the same. You can, if you wanted to, if you wanted to hire me for a program, you could go back and look at programs where I have appeared, take my image and put it into this new program, and there are no guidelines set forth as yet as to whether you have my permission to do that, whether I get paid for that, whether the writer who originally wrote the program that you stole the image from, whether he gets paid, because it's his words in my mouth. And then that's just the on-camera actors. The whole, the Screen Actors Guild, I have to take a breath. The Screen Actors Guild covers many different types of entertainers. Yes, the actors are the most famous perhaps, but we also cover singers, we cover dancers, we cover narrators, we cover broadcasters, we cover people who do background work. All of those are different areas. And unfortunately, artificial intelligence could wipe out completely background work, and a lot of people make their living from background work. From background work, it could, although this contract isn't being struck, the work that I do and others do on games, on cartoons, that could all be done by AI. Hmm. That section of the guild's work would be eradicated in time. And also, perhaps the most important thing is, because of inflation, if we don't go above what we normally get, we usually get a bump every 3 years, but we're asking for a sizable, in our mind, a sizable bump in order to meet inflation. Hmm. If we don't get that bump, everybody will be working for less dollars than they were making in 2023. They will make less dollars really than they were making in 2020, and certainly it will be true in 2026. Hmm. So we're trying to keep up with inflation. We've all suffered from inflation, everybody has, and our labor force is trying to keep up with the cost of inflation. I also should point out, this is very important for people to understand. You may or may not know who I am, and I am part of the 99% of the union that is not a, there's not a major star. Yes, there is 1% of our union who are very famous people, and they make a very, 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 very good living. The rest of us are working Joes, and we need these bumps in order to survive.
I mean, Armin, I agree totally with you yourself, although I have to say I always find it difficult to distinguish between yourself and Tom Cruise. I think you're identical in all sorts of ways.
You need better reading glasses.
Well, there you go. But Annette, if we come to you, good soul, because, I mean, clearly, as Armin's described it, we could have your role of Jeannie Hopkirk created by an artificial intelligence computer. And all, you know, these are critical aspects. Any thoughts from your own perspective as again, a jobbing actor who's been in the business for a considerable and a successful one over the last few decades?
Very few. I mean, many few. Many. I was listening to this with great interest because, Armin, I was married to Arthur Weingarten. I don't know if that rings a bell.
It does.
Who was heavily involved in the original, of the 60s anyway. I think there were about three writers' strikes at that time, and I think they did a great deal of good. for that whole thing. I'm also a member of that, of the thing too. Member.
Screen Actors Guild.
That's it. That's
all right.
Your name is the Screen Actors Guild app, by the way.
Hmm?
Excuse me. It used to be the Screen Actors Guild. It is now Screen Actors Guild AFTRA. That is the
AFTRA. That's
the merger in 2008. Yes. So yeah.
It is AFTRA. That's right. But I was thinking, as you were talking, if Arthur were here now, he would be devastated. He was becoming so frustrated with the business anyway and the way things were going. That he, I'm glad he's not here, because they in the 60s went through a huge amount to set things going, and I'm devastated to hear what's. I didn't actually know what was happening. I'm a bit out of the loop here at the moment. I've only just moved back, but it was interesting to hear you talk.
Yes, if I may, Annette, that strike, which was in tandem, both the actors and the writers did it together. That was back in 1960. The advances that they made were critical. There were no residuals before that strike.
Those residuals
came into effect because of that strike. Pension and health came into being because of that strike.
Yes.
That strike was enormously important to everybody who followed your husband and others who were on that strike. Mm.
Yes.
In fact, let's bring in the first recipient of the official Arthur Weingarten Contributor of the Year to the Midweek Drive series. That's Jessica Burtis. Jessica, you know, clearly you've listened to what Armin's been saying, what Annette's been saying. You obviously did several shows with Arthur. Your thoughts on this? Do you feel as though this is just fundamentally wrong, or is it a case of, well, it's just another form of technology taking over and replacing the human being?
No, I think it's extremely important because the arts are always now, it seems like, under attack. And I cannot think of anything more human than creating art and storytelling. That is, I feel, for me, at the core of humanity. And actors, writers, filmmakers, they are artists who make things that they last longer than so many other things. Like, you can still see all these films from times before. And I think that that's incredible. So it's very upsetting to see how kind of relegated to the back burner the people who are behind this are. But I think that I feel like our culture is becoming so materialist, where it's all about the money and it's all about being fast. And it's not really about taking the time to slow down and appreciate slower work with more quality and ethical practices more.
Thank you for that, if I may. Thank you, Jessica. I also want to point out, part of the problem is that in this new medium of streaming, we don't know what the producers are making. We have no idea whether it's a profitable enterprise or whether it's a non-profitable enterprise. And the reason we don't know, and it's exactly what Jessica said, is because they don't want their investors to know. They don't want the investors who are investing in Netflix or investing in any of the studios to know whether they're making money on streaming or whether they're losing money on streaming. And what the unions are trying to do is to get a foothold in here so that the entertainers that Jessica was very nicely talking about have their fair share. If I also may say, this question about artificial intelligence doesn't just affect artists. It will eventually affect every workplace around the world.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I was wondering whether I should actually do the motion capture for my latest lecture. Maybe I should step away from it now. Only kidding. I don't think I've been replaced as yet by ChatGPT, but it could happen. Victoria, singer-songwriter, you've been listening to what Armin's been saying and the rest of the team. Any thoughts from your own perspective? I mean, we've got Touch the Stars coming up next. That wasn't produced by ChatGPT.
No, I know with Phil, we've spoken about the AI and writing for the scripts, and it's the same with the song lyrics. And actually, I saw a track on Instagram where Elvis was then singing a different song, and they generated that from AI, which was slightly disturbing. But I hadn't thought about when it comes to royalties and permission between actor and filmmaker, if you like, because I've been working a lot of, on my royalties, and that almost is even more concerning.
You get 0.0003 pence, I think, for the line. Enough of that. We'll donate even more than that for Touch the Stars. We've got Ian Barnsley with us as well, ace expert in legal matters, perhaps not entertainment law, but I'm sure he could turn his mind to that as well. Ian, I know, has got one or two key questions, but Victoria, would you like to introduce yourself singing Touch the Stars, please?
All right, this is the pop version of Touch the Stars. I don't want to touch the stars, I just want to stand in their light. Quite rightly so too. Victoria Simmons there. Ian Barnsley, if I use the quote, when one pulls on the main cord of a net, there are no meshes that do not move, you'd say, aha, that's from Where Have I Been All My Life, a memoir of Annette Andres. Welcome to the programme, Ian. How are you? You've got a choice here. I mean, we, you know, you've been saying for many, many years, saying, oh, Armin, I've missed Armin again. Now's your chance to speak to Armin Schumann and Annette Andre on the same programme.
Well, it's fantastic to speak to them. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I'd like to speak about AI, if possible. I don't know how much you've spoke. I joined a bit late. But I was just wondering how much of a threat you think AI is in creative industries, certainly filmmaking in itself.
Well, we could play the last 5 minutes back, perhaps, but, you know.
I will try to address that as quickly and as concisely as I possibly can. As I've alluded to before, I'm fearful that whole swaths of our industry will disappear because of AI. It won't happen overnight. It won't happen tomorrow. It won't happen when this strike is rectified. But what can happen and probably will happen is that people who are very much a part of the project, who aren't necessarily in the center of the camera, but the people who do the voiceovers, the people who do cartoons, the people who do CD-ROM games, all of that can be replicated with AI, and people who depend upon that work and make a very good living from doing that work will all be out of work if the studios and the producers find a way to replicate the things. Let me give you an example, very quick example. One of the things that came up in the negotiations for the strike, the producers offered to this particular item. They said they would like to be able to have an extra, a background person, appear, take their picture, pay them the minimum day rate, which for them, I believe, is about $110, not very much. Pay them $110, take a picture of them, and then be able to replicate them forever without a penny more. Forever. And there's a great section of our union that are background performers. And they're essential. They may not have any lines, but they make the scene better, much better. And you know the difference between good background people and bad background people. So this would be terrible. And this was happening in the current negotiation. This was a provision, a proviso that the producers offered. And I'm happy to say that our people on the negotiating team would say no.
Almost an amazement. I mean, you know, we were talking about the healthy state of film industry in Nigeria and obviously other things. What are your thoughts now? You've had a chance to listen to Armin share some of the thoughts there, Donette, as well.
I'm grateful like the strike is happening now and not later, because they're seeing the dangers of what AI can do to the industry, and also how streaming has kind of spoiled a lot of things for them, because advertising was a major revenue for all these companies. Now they moved to streaming and they're not trying to like make sure the money flows down to the cast and everybody. So I think this strike is really important for both writers and actors, and I'm happy they're negotiating on it, and a lot of people are on it. I think I saw Tom Cruise talking about it too, being in the forefront of it. So it's good a lot of people are involved in it and they're combining together to try and stop the strike. And I just want to give a shout out to Armin, because I watched Buffy the Vampire Slayer, so it's cool to see you as it's cool to see Principal Snyder here, and it's an honor, honestly, but.
You didn't realise, Armin, that Buffy was going down so well in Nigeria, you see. Just opens up that whole thing.
I am glad to hear about that, and I'd like to see my residuals from Nigeria. this is a problem. Residuals have been curtailed because of streaming. The formula for residuals, which is essential for people to live on. This is what Annette and I were talking about, the strike in 1960. This is what that strike created. And if we're being seen anywhere in the world, and our image and our performance and our art is being appreciated, why is that we're not sharing in something a little bit of the value? So I thank you very much for the compliment, and I'm glad you enjoyed Buffy. It was a wonderful show. You know what? I have to stop that. My union has asked me not to talk about shows, but at least not to mention them per se. So forget I ever said the word.
Exactly. It never happened. We'll disavow all sorts of things. Hannah, you've been, again, sort of soaking this up, and we will talk, obviously, in the next quarter about what you're doing for charity in a few moments. But your thoughts as a consumer, obviously, of the magic that Victoria and Annette and Armin bring to us as part of their craft in many ways.
So I'm going to go back to what I said in the discussion a couple of weeks ago. Mm. Obviously, AI is being used for all sorts of things at the moment, but I honestly don't think that you can replicate the heart and the passion that creators put into their work. The actor feeling every line that they say, the singer who's gone through a heartbreak or gone through a massive life change, I don't think you can replicate true human emotion through robots and computers. And however hard people try to replicate that,
just don't think it's the same. And I think that having the backstory behind how someone got there, how someone is choosing to portray their life moment that happened to them, or those emotions that they've gone through, I think that that is the true journey, and that's part of the art. The end production isn't the only bit. It's the only bit that maybe we see and we consume, but it's the whole journey to get you to that end point that makes that art something that needs to be consumed and needs to be shared with others.
And Oliver,
let me answer that. Thank you, Hannah. I appreciate that. Obviously, you appreciate art, and a lot of people do. I'm not overspeaking by saying, in my industry, the people who do a lot of the hiring, the studios, I don't think they're as appreciative of the art form as you are. And in fact, as far as performances are concerned, I said this to Andrew Serkis years ago after I saw his performance as the Gollum. I said, that performance may be the beginning of the end for us, because I very much was taken up with that performance, and all I was looking at was a computer generated performance that he had helped create, absolutely, and his voice performance pushed it over the line and made it phenomenal, but it was a computer generated image. The voice was Andrew, but everything else was AI, and that was, I felt for him, yet I wasn't seeing his image. The same, I haven't seen Avatar, but I assume the same is true for Avatar as well.
We clearly live in interesting times. Let's turn briefly to Oliver. You were saying that you're convinced that your skill set of making miniatures can never be replicated. I'm not sure, Oliver. I'm really not sure. But anything you'd like to add to the discussion?
Well, I think that the most important question I can posit is, obviously, what's happening in America is going to be setting the precedent for the industry across the world. So how can we get involved? How can the average Siren listener help out?
A fair point, actually, Armin. Is there a way in which we can become more proactive? I mean, do we actually write to our MPs? Do we write to our sort of folk? Do we actually say you need to be aware of these challenges? And or do we stop subscribing to Netflix or say, you know, watching more reality television, which, of course, was the byproduct of the last strike in this century, really?
So if I may, the idea of not subscribing to streaming services has its pluses and its minuses. Mm. If you were to write to whoever your provider is and says, I'm canceling my subscription because I don't like what's happening in the business, that possibly is a good thing. However, there is a downside to that, so I'm not advocating it, which is if everyone unsubscribes from the streaming business, when the strike is over, there will be no work for people, because that is the new model. That is the model. So if you get rid of that, then there's no work for anyone, and that's unfortunate. So it's a gray area. Mm. Now, another thing that if people do want to help, then I would ask them to help financially. And there are not many, but there are a couple of places that you can contribute funds, not to a strike fund per se, but to help the writers, to help the actors, to help everybody else who's going to get involved with this. Because as long as we're on strike, everybody in our industry is not working. The drivers are not working. The makeup artists are not working. The costumers are not working. Go further down. The people who dry clean the clothes have nothing to do with the studios, except they get work from the studios to dry clean costumes. They will not be working. The caterers who sometimes show up with food, they will not be working. So there are organizations that will provide help, financial help, for the people who will be put out of work because of the strike. And we, on the actor side and on the writer side, are well aware that we are hurting people. We know that. We don't want to do that. But if we don't stand up now, this new medium will take off and we'll be left behind in the dust. And again, this is a role model. What we're doing should be a role model for every other labor force in the world.
Well, indeed, breaking news for Andrescher, of course, from SAG-AFTRA, said we're striking for the journeyman, not Tom Cruise, which again I think is worthwhile. But I think even Mr. Cruise himself is supportive of the whole thing. Ian, time is tight, but any questions you'd like to put to Annette or indeed Armin in the remaining moments we have?
Yes, to Annette. Annette, reading your book recently, I see that your foreword was by former colleague of yours, Roger Moore. Can you, I'm fascinated by Roger Moore. Can you tell me what it was like to work with him from your point of view?
Well, it was wonderful because Roger was a very special person. I've said many, many times that he was a true gentleman, very funny. Our work was always very light, lightweight, The Saint, etc., The Persuaded.
I don't know. I mean, some of those episodes of The Saint, I would say they actually would have put Olivier's Richard III into sort of dramatic sort of eclipses, really. Very positive.
So it's hard for me to say because with this conversation today that's been going on, I've been getting more and more hit up and
relax, breathe, Annette, breathe. It's okay. We'll get there
in
the end.
I'm trying to breathe. But the idea that, which I've been talking about, and I used to talk with Arthur, he could see it too, he could see it coming, that the whole heart of our business, actors, writers, singers, etc., it's a business of heart and feeling and talent. And it's being eaten up by this system that they're using now, and the thought that they can take a photograph. I know not a lot about this because I really don't want to know. I'm terrified of it. But they can take a photograph and then use it forever. Mm. So that eventually, as Armin said, there will be no work because they can just take your photograph, put it into something, animate it, and it becomes a work of art. No, it isn't. I'm feeling really emotional at the moment. I think if Arthur was here, he'd be sitting here seething.
He would be going ballistic, I think it's fair to say. But again, we'll work our way through the process. Again, lots of things we can talk about with respect to this. Armin, has it been a reasonably interesting Zoomer for yourself, though, today? I mean, we focused very much on that. I did want to actually, and I will mention, of course, the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network, PanCran, because it's a triple whammy of wonderful talent there. Yourself, of course, your wonderful wife, Kitty Swink, survivor of pancreatic cancer. And, of course, Jonathan Frakes, who's taken on board the role of being a PanCan ambassador. So I think that's worth noting as well. So hats off for that.
To answer your question, Alex, it has been a very good chat. And if I've moved anyone to think more about what's happening, then I have done my job. So thank you. And as far as PanCan, yes, PanCan is a wonderful, wonderful organization that Kitty and I and Jonathan and now John Billingsley as well, another friend of ours, are all very proud to be a part of. All of us have suffered from pancreatic cancer. Perhaps people on the panel or people listening have had friends, family that are affected. And if anyone has been affected by pancreatic cancer, I advocate wholeheartedly that you find PanCan on the web and find out what they can offer, because they offer so much, not just for getting cures, but also how to help people through the crisis.
And can we take it, Armin, that you will return in the very near future and keep us appraised of matters on your side of the pond?
If you ask, I will be there.
Splendid. I know Ian would be very pleased to actually hear that because he's very keen from that sort of point of view. Ian, has it been good for you?
Absolutely. Fantastic to see Annette and Armin and everybody else today.
Well, Annette, I have actually provided Ian with a copy of your memoir. So there we are. He's holding it up now for the benefit of the dear listener, etc. Next up, of course, we'll need to provide you with the full trilogy of Illyria texts, which are truly awesomely put together.
If I may interrupt, you've mentioned the title of my book, but I don't think you've mentioned the title of Annette's book. So will you mention Annette's title so all of us can go online and find it?
You know, you're absolutely right, of course, and it is entitled Where Have I Been All My Life? A memoir from Annette Andre. I think that's it, Annette. Where Have I Been All My Life?
That's it. And Where Have I Been All My Life?
in a computer-generated program, clearly. You know, this is the whole sort of essence of the whole thing. Don't worry. We'll have emergence, and indeed singularity will occur. Hannah, if you're kind enough to join us in the next quarter to actually talk, and the focus will be very much on yourself from that point of view. Annette, has it been good for you?
Yes, it has. It's been extremely interesting. And as I said, quite emotional, but also it brings you up short, wondering what we are going into.
Well, which is, as Tosin said, perhaps a worthwhile aspect as well. And maybe that's at the heart of the whole human experience as well. So I take it, Annette, you'll be back with us again for another link from London, of course, these days.
I certainly will. You know, I always enjoy them, but I certainly today was special.
Well, there we are. Annette Andre, to Armin Shimerman, and to Ian Barnsley, huge thanks. Part four will be emerging very shortly as we go, quite literally, from here to eternity.
From here to eternity, that's where she takes it. From here to eternity, with love, with love, with love.
Machine-like in its robotic nature, Georgia Moroder. Irony? Well, we can do that on the Midweek Drive as well. Hannah O'Brien as our Gloucestershire correspondent. A team event taking place, walking the length of the Gloucester Sharpness Canal, together from that point of view. And you're doing this for cystic fibrosis. And we know that you're a superheroine. That's why you obviously were a recipient of the Rookie of the Year award back in the day. Snickerdoodle, as indeed Phil Leonis and Lily Leonis would actually have it. And right, like you so. But this whole notion of, well, let's face it, it's pretty much a half marathon. I mean, you're looking at 16 miles there, as opposed to 13.1 miles for the half marathon. But half marathon is good. Talk to us about it, what you're doing with the team, and obviously how you've set up a Just Giving page in which people can actually support this as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for that introduction, Alex. It's been a journey already. So my team at work, one of our team members has had a little boy who unfortunately does suffer from cystic fibrosis. And as a company, we've nominated Cystic Fibrosis Trust to be our nominated charity of the year, which we will support with ongoing events. The first of those is to be the half marathon, but actually a bit longer than a half marathon walk down the Gloucester Sharpness Canal, 16 miles from start to finish. And at various intervals during the walk, we'll also be doing star jumps to replicate the physical exercise and various activities that those with cystic fibrosis have to carry out throughout their day, as part of keeping healthy, keeping things moving, and so on. So it's a cause that's really close to our hearts. We know little Max, who is an honorary team member. He won't be walking with us because he has school, but he's been through a lot, and we want to do everything that we can to support other children and other adults who are in a similar boat to him.
Excellent. I mean, obviously, we heard about pancreatic cancer with Armin from his perspective, but cystic fibrosis, again, is one of those aspects which it does affect a large number of people. Can you just share with us again what it is, and for people who actually aren't familiar with this thing, which can be really quite devastating in its own way, why it's such an important thing to actually start supporting, really?
Absolutely. So cystic fibrosis is a genetic disease, and about 1 in 25 people in the UK are carriers. That doesn't mean that they necessarily have it. It means that they carry the gene to pass it on. So currently there are approximately just under 11,000 people in the UK who actually have cystic fibrosis. It's something you're born with. You can't catch it from someone who's got it. It's just something that you either have or you haven't got, and CF causes buildup of mucus in the lungs, but also that's the best known area, but also in other organs in the body, which then can cause various quite serious symptoms. So in the case of Max, a little boy whose mother I work with, he had an emergency C-section because they identified at 28 weeks that he had a blocked bowel on his scan. And then he had surgery at the age of 1 day old. And then about a month later, he was diagnosed with cystic fibrosis. Mm. So it can be diagnosed at newborn screening, or it can be a bit further down the line.
And just remind us, Hannah, when is this taking place? When is the walk actually happening?
So the walk is happening on Tuesday, the 25th of July. So this coming Tuesday, there are about 10 people taking part. I'll be one of those. So please.
And doing star jumps en route as well, which is fantastic stuff. Obviously, you'll be back in time to report on next week's Midweek Drive Live, which is, maybe you won't be actually, you won't be around next week. We'll need to do some way in which we can coordinate that. So that's not because Hannah's going to do this walk and then that's it, it's all over. But anyway, let's progress onwards, because Jessica, lots of decisions to be made now. I mean, you've got Victoria, who is going to try, I'm sure, her level best to actually get to meet us in Covent Garden when we're actually there, because I've just been informed no trains running whatsoever tomorrow, apart from the underground. So we're going to get there. Hopefully Victoria will be. I know it's frightening, isn't it, Victoria? But still, never mind. So close, and maybe yet so far. However, your chance to meet Richard Fitzwilliams and Cathy Manso. Let's motor on from that perspective. Would you like a short musical interim, Jessica, to allow you to collate your thoughts together before you give us the summation of your views on the programme, and indeed, without any artificial intelligence whatsoever, give us the most valuable contributor?
I think that would be fabulous.
Here comes Kiki D.
Rock and roll are the games you play. High fly or see your name in lights. Social suicide. Oh, oh, don't you tell me it's rough. At the top you get the cream of the crop. Image seekers, they're on wheel to wheel. This week break, well next week, who knows. Oh, oh, don't you tell me it's rough. Oh, oh, don't you tell me it's tough. Don't let anyone
goes without saying that all Midweek Drivettes are stars in their own way, and you are as well for just tuning in to us and listening on Siren Radio. Consider yourself duly starred. Jessica, would you like to provide us with the summation of the programme, please?
Yes, I would love to. All right, so kicking off our first half hour, Spencer Pryor joined us to discuss the world's best craft chocolate. Victoria recently went to an in-person chocolate tasting, and today Tosin and Oliver had some chocolate in the studio to try. Spencer explained that craft chocolate is all about taste and ethical creation. He also dispelled the myth that Belgian chocolate is the most superior and said that Belgium pushed the McDonaldization of chocolate, which means that most Belgian chocolate has nothing to do with the country, but instead it's about mass production and sugar. Instead, Spencer says we should try to focus on taste and ethics. In case you haven't heard another on-air chocolate tasting, there's a process Spencer recommends to truly understand the flavor. So first, snap the chocolate near your ear and pinch your nose and let the piece melt on your tongue. And after a few seconds, let go and breathe in. Oliver said that the studio bar had a crunch to it, bringing up the idea of different textures in chocolate. And the tasting reminded Tosin of when he visited a chocolate factory in Nigeria and tried bitter chocolate for the first time. Mass-produced chocolate harms the environment and the people who grow it. To help preserve the environment and keep chocolate's idea in mind, remember to savor and don't surf. To find out more, you can go to Cocoa Runners, and you can also do virtual tastings with a box of chocolate shipped to you. In our second half hour, Lou Hickey and rapper teacher MC Grammer joined us to discuss showing appreciation to our instructors. Lou said that many parents got to see how difficult teaching can be when Zoom classes happen during COVID. Jacob says that he keeps many of the cards he gets from students and says that teachers tend to be humble people, reflected by the statistic that 59% of teachers would prefer a gift that was handmade, but Lou did note that 43% of teachers would prefer gift cards. Jacob was once given a chocolate cake recipe at the end of the year and says it was one of his favorite gifts he's ever received. Alex says that when it comes to gifts, it's the thought that counts. Next, we talked with Sam Waz, a child psychologist, about road trips and how to keep toddlers occupied in the car. Tosin says he got impatient in the car as a kid, but Oliver said he let his brother be the loud kid on trips. Over 50% of parents still favor car trips for long journeys with kids, but many feel it's difficult to keep their kids entertained. Not only do young children find it hard to follow a story, but they're also too small to see out the window from their car seats, so options for their entertainment are limited. Sam recommends a sing-along to music, as it requires regulated breathing that can help calm them and you, and make the kids feel like everyone is together. Listening to stories can be even better. Even though a child's brain can have a hard time following stories, Sam says that this can help them practice if you pause the story throughout, explain it back to them, and play it again while asking questions. You can also set off on car journeys at night with bed routines done so that they can fall asleep. Not only can this help the kids have a calm journey, but it can help you also. In our third half hour, we were joined by the stellar Annette Andre and Armin Shimmerman with thoughts on the entertainment industry. Armin has personal experience with the Hollywood guilds and those who are still involved now that the Writers Union went on strike since the beginning of July due to differences in the entertainment industry. He explained that the industries are primarily interested in streaming services now instead of network shows like in the past, and that this puts money in the hands of the streaming buyers instead of the network advertisers. With less episodes in streaming seasons comes less work, and things are getting done faster with less rules. Armin says that the Writers Union wants to see the creation of rules, especially when it comes to AI. Annette is a member of SAG-AFTRA and said that Arthur Weingarten went to many strikes in the 60s, which made formative changes to the industry, especially with residuals. She finds it upsetting to see what's happening, being an actress herself, despite so many previous strides for ethical practices in the industry. Annette says that the arts are a business of the heart, and it is being eaten up and turned into something that isn't art. Victoria mentioned her own experience with royalties and music and how intimidating that can be as well. Ian Barnsley also joined us and was curious about AI and how impactful it could be. Armin says that he's afraid that swaths of the industry will disappear because of AI. There have been discussions recently about how people's likeness has been taken and reused without compensation. Hannah made an interesting point that she doesn't think you can replicate true human emotions with AI, but Armin thought that some movies have still used computer-generated faces, like the Avatar series, that can still convey emotions. That's an important discussion. Also on an important note, Armin is part of the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network, and for anyone who needs to find support for pancreatic cancer, you can find their website for more. In our fourth half hour, Hannah O'Brien, we talked about how Hannah O'Brien will be taking a marathon walking, half marathon, well, just over half marathon, and will be doing things like star jumps to help replicate the physical exercise that those with cystic fibrosis
her company's choice cause of the year in honor of little Max, who has cystic fibrosis, have to go through. For those who may be unfamiliar, cystic fibrosis is a genetic disease, and 1 in 25 people in the UK are carriers who may pass CF on in their genes, but thousands in the UK have it, and it isn't contagious, but it causes buildups in the body that can be painful. The walk is happening on Tuesday, July 25th, and you can still support her on her Just Giving page. I think for the award this week, I want to split it between Annette and Armin for their discussion about the entertainment industry and the story.
Yeah, I think that's a fair... I mean, Victoria, are you going to violently disagree with that and say, what are you talking about, you North Carolina lass? I mean, surely it should have actually gone to X, Y, or Z.
No, I completely agree.
And Hannah, for the benefit of the people who are saying the company, it's not some nebulous kind of mafia-like routine, would you like to name-check your company as well, please?
Yes, of course. It's SHS Sales and Marketing.
SHS Sales and Marketing. There. Just dotted those T's, cross the I's, and so on and so forth. Well, Tosin, second Midweek Drive Live wrapped up. Did you enjoy the experience?
Yes, I did. And I enjoyed the discussion about the strike. I tasted chocolate. What else could I ask for? It was a really good day.
Chocolate and strikes. Yeah. You know, what's not to love? It's like the human experience writ large. Hannah, has it been good for you?
Always, Alex. Thank you for having me.
Now, was I right? You're not around for next Wednesday's show. Is that right?
Yeah, I won't be around for next Wednesday.
That's okay. That's fine. Why not? Just out of interest?
I'll be recovering.
Yeah, this is it. I know. It's all right. It's the Star Champs and the walk that was there.
We'll be having a team social.
Of course. Partay. And those Gloucestershire parties.
That's
just crazy. Exactly. It's great. Victoria, hopefully we'll see you in a few hours from now. Fingers crossed. Unless you want to start walking from Shepperton to Covent Garden now, in which case, who knows, you might get there for tomorrow.
No, I've downloaded an app and I'm checking.
Hey, this is serious stuff here. Okay.
Serious.
Absolutely. Oliver, have you enjoyed your latest contribution to the cultural lines of computers in the world today?
I always do.
Splendid. And presumably, yes. Jessica, has it been good for you?
Oh, yeah, it's always fun.
Back with us for the Psycho Bombs with, of course, Victoria and our Resonance Rewind very shortly. Yeah, the Psycho Bombs. I know, it's very strange. Okay, keep on keeping on. Don't forget, there is another classic episode. I say classic, it's almost as though it's a repeat. No, it's a no-repeat scenario. It is the early night with Callum Davis getting into the party spirit. Partay. I didn't think he was from Gloucestershire. Still, never mind. That's on Siren with the early night. Keep on keeping on wherever you happen to be. To Tosin, to Oliver, to Victoria, Hannah and Jessica, huge thanks. What shall our final farewell actually be? What should we say good luck, Hannah? Would that be sort of fair enough? Give it a shot. So, okay, after three. One, two, three.
Good luck, Hannah. Thanks, everyone.
Look back in silence. The cradle of your whole life. There in the distance, losing its greatest prize. Nothing is easy, nothing is sacred. Why? Where did the bow break? It happened before your time. Baby, you can start again, laughing in the open air. Have yourself another dream tonight.